directed by S.J. Matthews and assisted by Chris Cheney.
The Wood Songs crew member of the week is our priceless Sandra Childs.
Special support provided by Hybrid Springwater, QX.net, Natasha's Bistro, and the Euclid Kroger's in Lexington.
Our show is produced with the support of VisitLights.com, the Bluegrass Hospitality Association, and the DoubleTree Suites Lexington by Hilton, welcoming visitors from all over the world to Lexington, Kentucky.
Wood Songs and the Wood Song symbol are registered trademarks of Rachel Aubrey Music. Thanks for listening. I'm Joe Conkright.
For Michael Jonathan and the entire Wood Songs crew, this is Dorothy Edwards. We hope you'll join us again next week for the Wood Songs Old Time Radio Hour.
Nous sommes des millions à parler français, une langue vibrante qui façonne notre culture. Ici Damien Robitaille. Le 24 juin à 19h, heure de l'Est, ne manquez pas le spectacle Tout pour la musique, en direct sur TFO. J'y serai en compagnie d'Isabelle Boulay, Florent Volant, Wesley, Michel Campagne et bien d'autres. Aussi, du 25 au 28 juin, rassemblons-nous virtuellement sur la chaîne YouTube Tout pour la musique pour visionner des performances exclusives. Visitez toutpourlamusique.ca pour plus de détails.
My name is Nevaeh. I lost my foot in a lawnmower accident. Now I teach other children how to play safe. Kids shouldn't play near lawnmowers. Lawnmowers are very loud. The driver wouldn't be able to hear you if you were playing anywhere near. It's very important to be cautious.
Whatever game you play, play safe.
A message from the War Amps. Learn more at waramps.ca.
As the COVID-19 pandemic continues to spread, it is important to stay safe. Coronavirus is now in Canadian provinces and territories. By law, if you have traveled abroad recently, you must self-isolate. To do your part, stay home as much as possible and practice social distancing. Try to maintain at least 2 meters away from others. Encourage those who are sick or showing symptoms to self-isolate or to seek medical attention. As always, wash your hands frequently, avoid touching your face, and practice good respiratory etiquette by covering your coughs and sneezes. Clean regularly used surfaces. COVID-19 symptoms can mimic colds and flu and include fever, cough, and difficulty breathing. Infected individuals may also have mild symptoms or none at all. For up-to-date information, check reliable sources like your local health authority or the Public Health Agency of Canada.
Oh, welcome to LU Radio 102.7 FM. I'm Layman Pascal, and this is still, to some degree, the Cinematic Asylum. What are we talking about today? Subtle prudes. Let's have a look at what might be only slightly wrong with us on the Subtle Prudes edition of Layman Pascal's Cinematic Asylum. Now, the following episode of the Cinematic Asylum is rated MCP for mild, confusing, and philosophically oriented themes. We're going to be talking about sex, not explicitly. I won't be using any four-letter words, not even the word four. And radio prevents me from showing you the drawings I made for this episode, but we will be discussing topics that might have been considered racy and ambiguous 80 years ago. But since they could all now be discussed on PBS or in PG-13 movies, I don't think we'll have a problem unless for some reason your sensibilities are 80 years out of date, for good or ill. No reason to think recent things are the same as progress. But the very topic we're handling today, which is the weird little ways in which we're squirmy about the concept of sexuality, could certainly provoke squirmy feelings in those who haven't already done some personal work to prevent that from happening. So let's talk about subtle prudes. Subtle prudesse. Subtle is such a subtle word, the letter B cannot be heard. Subtle,
subtle
prudes.
Is such a subtle word, the letter B cannot be heard.
Subtle prudes. Normally, those with too much education have been inclined to think in terms of a contrast or dichotomy between prudes and libertines. between, on the one hand, those who are unnaturally clenched and reactive against pleasures, particularly sexual pleasures and particularly open or graphic instances of sexuality, and on the other hand, those who we think are hedonistic, cavalier, way too open about pleasure and sexuality and even trivialize it into something commonplace with no regard for either its sanctities or dangers. Both of these positions are very suspect, of course. We are always, usually, rightly, and seldom leftly suspicious of extreme positions, although, to be fair, we seldom agree on what constitutes an extreme position. For example, is universal health care a radical political proposal, or is it the reasonable minimum expectation of citizens in a modern society and the attempt to monetize and discriminate in health care according to the greed incentive of medical and insurance corporations actually constitutive of an extreme position? Debated! But despite the ambiguity about extremes, we can have a look and see what the exaggerated versions of prude and libertine might be so we can get on to the topic of subtle prudes. An extreme prude may be someone who was taught in their home or their communities that pleasure, inspiration, excitation, emotion, and diversity around sexuality is something you do not express. Patterns of abuse and suppression often contribute to these attitudes over generations. People are trained from an early age to experience stress when they encounter the idea of open flows of sexuality. This leads to calls for censorship of erotic material, sour faces when you see people kissing in public, weird outbursts against things like strippers or homosexuals or polygamists or nudists or anything that has nothing to do with you but reminds you of sex and being suppressed about it. A kind of anger, fear, or disgust is coupled with the ordinary sex drives and about the ordinary sex drives of other people and other organisms. Conversely, libertines seem to be unable to act as though there were anything special about sexuality that one ought to be careful about. Obviously, orgies, for example, are situations in which the risk of disease, emotional flare-up, and a general attitude of desacralization and casualness are increased. They may be numb to the idea that children shouldn't be overexposed to sexual content and certainly not exposed to sexual activities until their own sexual circuitry is fully integrated. Much in the same way that nakedness loses a lot of its charm in a nudist colony, so too does sexuality lose a lot of its higher and deeper flavor, we might even say its spirituality, when it's treated too cavalierly and no one takes the time or intention to cultivate a sacred context, a specificity, a distinction from others and other situations in which a sort of alchemical chamber is psychologically and socially set up to enable the energies to be held, concentrated, and transformed. Okay, prudes and libertines, but what about that murky in-between area between the gaping availability of the libertine and the clenched sphincter of the prude? What about that in-between area? What about subtle prudes? Is that even a topic? I've never heard it mentioned before. What does it even mean? Well, if we take for granted that sexuality should have some limits in terms of being treated cautiously and intentionally and sacredly, rather than neutrally, indiscriminately, and with profligacy, then we could say without going into the libertine territory that there is still a lot of room for us to be secretly prudish, sneakily prudish in weird ways that most of us don't even consider.
Toadies and familiars is now 500 feet down in solid rock. 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 And runs a comb through his unruly abundant hair. The president appears on national TV with a well-cut suit hanging loose on his skinny frame. Out in adolescent treble, altering categorically deny there are any crack, so-called fountain of youth,
Robert William Burroughs in dub doing up the president from his novel Western Lands. So look, consider this. Subtle prudes. You hear about a guru or spiritual teacher who's had sexual relations with some of his students over the years, as if they were trading sex for supposed spiritual illumination. And this upsets you. I'm not a prude, you say, but this kind of stuff, it just can't go on. Disgusting. Immoral. Okay, fair enough. But oddly, you don't get upset when you hear that someone brought food for their guru, or perhaps even made a monetary donation to the ashram in exchange for access to so-called spiritual wisdom. In fact, it's only the idea of sexuality that's disturbing you in this particular context. We might say that although you do not act like an overt, explicitly prude individual, you might be sneakily a prude, a subtle prude, or prune, either way. Or consider your double standard with animals. I have this same double standard. Let me say off the bat and equally off the ball that, of course, you shouldn't be having sex with animals. At least not without a really good reason. But that's not the issue. The issue I'm talking about is how we evaluate the relative moral status of different types of interactions with other kinds of organisms. If you ever eat meat, then we could say that you have no right to be upset at bestiality. Think about it. Which is worse when it comes to a human being? Having sex with them or murdering them and eating them? It's clear that sex, voluntary or involuntary, is, in every sense in every nation of the world, usually a lesser crime than murdering and eating people. But it's a double standard when it applies to animals for many of us. We murder and eat them every single day. But when we hear about someone having sex with one, we cringe and roil and become indignant. It's disgusting. So that's another way of thinking about what a subtle prude might be. If you feel more comfortable with people murdering and eating things than having sex with those things, you might have a little inner weirdness about flows of sexual energy, right?
I love how your eyes close whenever you kiss me. And when I'm away from you, I love how you miss me. I love the way you always treat me tenderly. But darling, most of all,
what were we talking about? Oh, sex with animals. I mean, sort of. Moral ambiguities in regards to the way we conceive the topic. We can all sort of get on board with someone if they say we should expand the range of our notion of attractiveness, right? That seems ethical in principle. We shouldn't merely just think that sexiness is confined to the kinds of airbrushed celebrity meatheads they put on the covers of grocery store magazines. That's superficial, reactionary, manipulated, unnatural, uncharitable, narrow. Shouldn't you also be able to find arousing beauty in the kinds of people who didn't have boob jobs and nose jobs or get on consumer magazines? Shouldn't you be able to respond to a complex, organic, wider, natural range of human body types? What's wrong with a few extra pounds, a different hair color? What's wrong with a different race? Are you unable to be aroused by another race? That seems racist and limiting and narrow, and we aspire to be better than that. But what if you're talking to someone and they make that argument, and you're like, oh, okay, I should expand the range of my response, and they say, well, okay, why limit yourself to humans? Isn't it more organic and inclusive to find stimulating beauty in all its forms, and not just in the narrow, socially brainwashed category of the species you happen to be in? That's weird, right? I feel it's weird, but that weird feeling is interesting. At some point in a very plausible and ethical conversation about sexuality, there's a threshold that gets crossed, in which all of a sudden it doesn't make sense or is getting rejected by our own moral instincts. It's a very vague, indiscernible, and delicate threshold to pass through. If I pass through it, am I a subtle prude? Maybe so. Thank you.
see her lying back in her satin dress, in a room where you do what you don't confess. Sundown, you better take care. If I find you've been creeping round my back stairs. Sundown, you better take care. If I find you've been creeping round my back stairs. Looking like a queen in a sailor's dream, and she don't always say what she really means. Sometimes I think it's a shame when I get feeling better when I'm feeling no pain. Sometimes I think it's a shame when I get feeling better when I'm feeling no pain. Sundown, you better take care. If I find you've been creeping round my back stairs. Sometimes I think it's a sin when I feel like I'm winning when I'm losing again. See her looking fast in her faded jeans. She's a hard-loving woman, got me feeling mean. Sometimes I think it's a shame when I get feeling better when I'm feeling no pain. Sundown, you better take care. If I find you've been creeping round my back stairs. Sundown, you better take care. If I find you've been creeping round my back stairs. Sometimes I think it's a sin when I feel like I'm winning when I'm losing again.
Out, Gordon Lightfoot.
Subtle prudes. What about the depiction of sexuality in movies and television shows? Healthy young children frequently self-censor in the sense that they cover their eyes, leave the room, make grossed-out noises, or turn away from such scenes when they're presented to them too early. A libertine might be insensitive to all of that natural response and try to force or encourage children to be okay with whatever they're seeing, rather than respecting that some natural processes might be involved in which these children are too young to integrate that kind of content. On the other hand, a prude might freak out if that content comes on the screen and shut it off and demand to know who is responsible and write an angry letter to their congresswoman demanding that such filth be criminalized. Between those two extremes of weirdness lies the territory of the subtle prude. Say that you wouldn't obviously show children graphic sexual content, nor would you become hysterical if they thought they'd caught a glimpse of something inappropriate on a screen. You're pretty chill about it. However, if you're watching a show, and there's children or maybe just other people in the room, and some risque material comes on screen for a few moments, do you squirm a little inside? Do you wonder if you should do something about it? Do you wonder how it looks in terms of how other people think you're reacting? Maybe you've got a tiny little ghost prude somewhere inside yourself. Or what about this kind of example? Have you ever met anyone who's seemingly perfectly happy to get carried away into a sexual event, especially if they're drunk or intoxicated or zealously enthusiastic, but the idea of intentionally, calmly scheduling and rationally discussing sexuality makes them cringe and get upset? They're not prudes. They're pro-sex. They might even say that bringing consciousness into sexuality is bad because it ruins the wonderful, organic, passionate spontaneity. But who knows? Maybe that's a way of avoiding a small stream of uncomfortable feelings, a subtle prudish buried deep inside them, which makes them think they can only approach it when they're out of their minds and don't actually have to have a look at it or feel or observe it very closely with a clear mind. Maybe they're prudes in an extremely sneaky way. This is Layman Pascal on CILU 102.7 FM, the Cinematic Asylum's look at subtle prudes.
If only for the hell of it, settled for CILU is sponsored in part by the students of Lakehead University, our listeners, and our sponsors. At this time, we would like to thank the following sponsors for their continuous support.
The Foundry at 242 Red River Road, open 11 a.m. to 2 a.m. Monday to Saturday, featuring folk in Mondays, karaoke Tuesdays, trivia Wednesdays, open stage Thursdays, and live music weekends. Find out more at thefoundrypub.com. The Thunder Bay Symphony Orchestra. Log on to tbso.ca or call 626-TBSO for details on the 2019-2020 season and how to get tickets. The Lakehead University Student Union, promoting action, advocacy, and service by bringing you student centers. Learn more by visiting their office in the tunnels of the student center or by logging on to lusu.ca.
It is April 3rd, 1952, at Orgonon, Rangeley, Maine. I, Wilhelm Reich, am sitting alone in the large room in the lower house. All people are gone. In the morning and the whole day yesterday, a meeting took place of the members of the Board of Trustees of the foundation which carries my name. Everybody's gone now, and I would like to add a few words to the recording we made yesterday and today of the disaster which struck Orgonon.
You're back with Subtle Prudes on LUradio.ca, 102.7 FM, CILU. That was Dr. Wilhelm Reich, famous psychotherapist, biophysicist, crypto-Marxist, and who knows what all else. The last guy to officially have his books burned by the American government. And the coiner, I'm told, of the term the sexual revolution. He had a very interesting idea about misplaced sexuality, and he's not the only one. There's this sense that sexuality has normal functions, you know, reproduction, pleasure, health, and perhaps some sort of tantric spiritual transformation that helps us build our energy body, whatever that might be. So we have this energy or these flows within ourselves that are evolved or designed to empower some natural functions that are part of our biological architecture. These flows have a kind of characteristic quality to them. They're enticing, enlivening. They make us see things with rose-colored glasses. They make our muscles quiver and wiggle and create undulations and shifts in our psychology and generally produce extra activity and focus and appreciation of certain things. Okay, great. But isn't it weird if those same qualities show up in other areas of life that have nothing to do with sexuality? Wasn't it weird when all those girls were screaming, gasping, squealing, and fainting because Elvis Presley wiggled his hips on stage while they were immersed in a crowd? It's, in a way, always weird when people get confronted by a musician by squealing, jumping around, getting breathy, woozy, and wiggly. Isn't that the sex energy? And if so, why has it gotten diverted into the music appreciation context? Why do people get so worked up about politics, especially when they hear someone express an obscene position? Oh, that viewpoint, that politician is just so disgusting, I can't even believe it. I feel like I'm going to explode with moral indignation. My pulse is racing. I've just got to tweet or post on Facebook or call a friend and complain. Right? That's weird. It's got a weird edge to it. Where does the extra energy and the accelerated tempo come from in a normal organism? It's perfectly normal to have political views and critiques, but where does the extra energy, the extra zeal come from that makes people so hot about the issues? Is it, as many have speculated, a misuse or diversion of the energy that the body normally produces for its sexual flows?
Thank you. with your feet in the air and your head on the ground. Try this trick and spin it, yeah. Your head will collapse and there's nothing in it, and you'll ask yourself, where is my mind? Where is my mind? Where is my mind? It's all the way out in the water, see it swimming. They told me, he swears, try not to talk to me, koi koi. Where is my mind? Where is my mind? Where is my mind? Where is my mind?
And gone to my reward, a job in heaven's textile plant on a golden boulevard, where the mill was made of marble, the machines were made out of gold, and nobody ever got tired, and nobody ever grew old. This mill was built in the garden. No dust or lint could be found. And the air was so fresh and so fragrant, with flowers and trees all around. And the mill was made of marble. The machines were made out of gold, and nobody ever got tired, and nobody ever grew old. It was quiet and peaceful in heaven, There was no clatter or boom. You could hear the most beautiful music as you worked at the spindle and loom. And the mill was made of marble. The machines were made out of gold. And nobody ever got tired. And nobody ever grew old. There was no unemployment in heaven. We worked steady all through the year. We always had food for the children. We never were haunted by fear. And the mill was made of marble. The machines were made out of gold. And nobody ever got tired. And nobody ever grew old. When I woke from this dream about heaven, I wondered if someday there'd be a mill like that one down below here on earth for workers like you and like me. Where the mill was made of marble, the machines were made out of gold. Where nobody ever got tired. And nobody ever grew old. Where nobody ever got tired. And nobody ever grew old.
Cover version of the Pixies' Where Is My Mind? And then the mill was made of marble. Let me ask you something. Do Rick and Elsa have sex in Casablanca? No one asks that question anymore, but I think it used to be a big topic. I watched Casablanca online on the movie channel when I was in my early teens. As a boy, it might have been the first romantic film I ever voluntarily watched, and I only watched it because I'd heard it was supposed to be a classic, and I was at the age where I was just starting to want to know about classic things or get a deeper take on the background of the culture in which I was embedded. Sure, I'd seen a few black and white Errol Flynn movies or Marx Brothers on CBC Sunday morning movie. I wasn't scared of the black and white meme itself. Anyway, this movie, if you haven't seen it, it's from the 40s and 50s, everybody would have known. This woman goes to see her ex-lover, a jaded cafe owner and cynical secret political idealist, Rick. She needs him to give her and her new boyfriend, a member of the anti-fascist political resistance, some documents that will help them get out of North Africa to continue fighting the good fight against the Nazis. Anyway, they hang out and drink and listen to Sam play some piano music for them. And then the movie cuts to some scenes of potentially phallic buildings, and then it's the next day. They're together and he gives her the papers. Did they do it? Probably. I guess. Maybe not, but definitely maybe. It's subtle. It's just off stage, you know? They're showing you something, but they're not quite showing you. They're showing you that they're not showing you, and by that act, they're showing you something. It's hard to say exactly what constitutes the gray area of subtle prudes, but isn't it interesting when a culture is very open to sexual innuendo and very agitatable about obvious sexual content? What's the motive to reduce it to almost nothing in order for it to be acceptable, to subtleize the content? Don't get me wrong, it's a hell of a film and probably would have been ruined by a sex scene, and frankly, most sex scenes in movies are boring after the first few seconds, but nonetheless, culture has a strong tendency to accept sexuality only when the volume is turned way down and the images are pushed off to the side of the stage or rendered metaphorical. I'm no biblical scholar, ask anyone. I can't tell my Isaiah from a hole in the ground, but there's a weird thing I heard once on a camping trip. I heard that the Old Testament tale of Sodom and Gomorrah doesn't actually mention sodomy at all. It just says that God punished those towns for some kind of sin and that the people were practicing. And if that's true, and I don't know it is, then it's pretty weird that people have always just assumed for the next 3,000 years that it definitely meant sodomy. The name sodomy comes from the name of that town. It means that people who read the Bible for thousands of years were so sure they knew what kind of sin was being alluded to that they named that sin after that story. That's pretty weird, right? I mean, how obsessed with anal sex do you have to be to assume that any unspecified sin mentioned in an old book is definitely sodomy? That's a leap, and you made that leap pretty fast, didn't you? Seems like something subtle is going on with people's sexual emotions, right? Right? No? Just me? All right. Think about how weird it is. Think about the weirdness of how we relate to this kind of content differently in literary and graphic mediums. There's an immediacy to imagery, of course. If you find someone reading a long novel that contains some explicit erotic passages, you probably don't care. You might even pat them on the head and praise them for at least reading, because literature. But if you found that same person watching a movie in which that same erotic scene was graphically portrayed, you might flinch skeptically or shake your head, or even if you're interested in it yourself, you might put up a mental and emotional defense against that whole category. What is that person doing? Is this subtle prudishness in ourselves? Or do the differences in our communication devices really make that much of a difference to the outcomes? Well, we're coming, no pun intended, to the end, no pun intended, of the episode, no pun intended, or accomplished. I've been Layman Pascal, and you've been listening to a weird trek through the almost indiscernible sexual hinterland of subtle prudishness, or mild sexual weirdness in people who are otherwise pretty normal. This is CILU 102.7 FM, not GM, as some of you have been saying, and I'm left thinking about Socrates. In Plato's very interesting play, The Symposium, Socrates goes to a party. The poetry medal has been given out at the local Athenian Olympics, and the winner's throwing a party, and everyone at the party has to give an impromptu dissertation on love. Socrates comes last and tells the tale of how he was trained by a priestess in an esoteric sect to use attractiveness and arousal as a form of spiritual contemplation. You start with what specifically turns you on, but move into more general areas, larger and more inclusive, until eventually you're attracted in all directions to the whole universe, which then feeds back upon you, and desire and satisfaction merge into one endless paradoxical Buddhist superloop of being-becoming. And isn't it weird that we are such creatures as can shift our reproductive drive energy into almost any other form, and even into places where we don't even notice that's what we're doing? Until next time.
The fundamental things apply as time goes by.
Sigmund Freud considered Wilhelm Reich to be one of the most brilliant of the young psychoanalysts with whom Freud worked in Vienna in the early 1920s. Reich didn't have the opportunity to visit Freud here in his study in Hampstead in what is now the Freud Museum. Reich didn't get to lay on Freud's famous couch, but we do find a selection of Reich's most important psychoanalytic works on Freud's bookshelf over there. This is a collection of Reich's social and political writings. In it, Reich argued for the essential compatibility of Marxism and psychoanalysis, and argued against Freud's view that sexual repression was the condition of possibility for all civilization. He used the same kind of anthropological work that Freud himself had used to argue that sexual freedom and civilization were compatible. It must be admitted that many of Reich's early writings appear dated to us today. But that makes it all the more striking when we discover resonances between his descriptions of the authoritarian, patriarchal society in which he lived and aspects of our own society today. Reich is best known today for his work that started in the 1930s. Reich developed what he called a science of organomics based on the positing of a fundamental sexual life energy animating the whole universe, which he called orgone energy. We remember Reich's theory of orgone energy, if we do these days, mostly via his invention of the orgone energy accumulator, a large wooden box inside which the patient would sit to absorb the orgone energy, achieve orgiastic potency, and cure all manner of mental and physical ills. The orgone accumulator is, though, perhaps best remembered via Woody Allen's parody of it in his 1973 film Sleeper, where it appeared as the orgasmatron. If anybody remembers Reich's cloud-busting machine, a machine which directed orgone energy outwards and upwards to cause rain in deserts and also, of course, to repel alien invaders, it's probably through Kate Bush's song Cloudbusting. There's more about the history of Western popular culture in the last 50 years that we remember the orgone accumulator and the cloudbuster, where we don't remember Reich's early social and political writing. Reich's very humane sensitivity to human suffering focused very often on the sufferings of children and adolescents, which isn't to say he wasn't interested in adults, but that he saw the roots of adult suffering in the oppression of the children and adolescents that all those adults had once been. He saw a contradiction in the way that even the socialist family who fought for social justice dominated their own children and thus perpetuated the very structures of society against which they were arguing as socialists. Perhaps one of the strongest aspects of these early social and political writings is Reich's insistence on the inseparability of the struggle for social justice and the feminist movement. Reich argued very strongly that the aims of left struggles could not be achieved so long as patriarchy was reproduced in the family, because that was the reproduction of the very form of society against which socialists were arguing. That is a lesson that perhaps some sections of the left still have to learn today.
As the COVID-19 pandemic continues to spread, it is important to stay safe. Coronavirus is now in Canadian provinces and territories. By law, if you have traveled abroad recently, you must self-isolate. To do your part, stay home as much as possible and practice social distancing. Try to maintain at least 2 meters away from others. Encourage those who are sick or showing symptoms to self-isolate or to seek medical attention. As always, wash your hands frequently, avoid touching your face, and practice good respiratory etiquette by covering your coughs and sneezes. Clean regularly used surfaces. COVID-19 symptoms can mimic colds and flu and include fever, cough, and difficulty breathing. Infected individuals may also have mild symptoms or none at all. For up-to-date information, check reliable sources like your local health authority or the Public Health Agency of Canada.
CIOU is sponsored in part by the students of Lakehead University, our listeners, and our sponsors. At this time, we would like to thank the following sponsors for their continuous support.
Signal Resources Limited, Thunder Bay's locally owned and operated audio-visual professionals. Contact them about your next multimedia event or installation at 807-475-9341 or at signalresources.com. The Thunder Bay Community Auditorium. Find them at tbca.com to purchase tickets and find out all of the details on their upcoming events. Vox Popular Media Arts Festival, located inside Trinity Hall at 310 Park Avenue. Join the fun every September for the annual Media Arts Fest, entering its 16th year in 2020.